Thanks for downloading this show from PC One. Before we get rolling, here's a word from one of the folks who helped bring you this podcast. Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Another week of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. How are you guys? Welcome. We are all set, ready to go, and excited to bring you an interview I know many of you will be very, very excited about here on this week's edition of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, which is free. Remember to go to podcastone.com. Help keep it free. Find all the great sponsors of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Because of them, we bring you this show each week with limited ads at no additional cost to you. Remember, if you heard a sponsor that you want to try out or forgot a sponsor and want to see a list of my sponsors, you can access them by clicking on the Killer Deals button at podcastone.com, search my name, and visit my page for the Eddie Trunk Podcast. We only approve sponsors that make sense for my audience, and each of my sponsors are listed there with the banners linked to the promotional deal and the promos listed by the brands. Everything you need, easily accessible in one place. So thanks to all of our sponsors, and thanks to all of you for supporting them. In addition, the Eddie Trunk Podcast is a participant in the Amazon Associates program. That's an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for me to earn fees by linking to Amazon.com and affiliated sites. You can link to Amazon at podcastone.com. Like I said, go there, go to the Eddie Trunk Podcast page, hit that killer deals bar or Amazon, shop away. It doesn't cost you a penny more to do it. And we appreciate you helping keep this a free broadcast each and every week. So what a broadcast we have for you this week. Many people have been waiting for this. This was done a few weeks ago in Toronto, Canada, and it is the reunion of a band that I am asked about so many times, and that is the members of Triumph. Now, the backstory on this interview was that I went to Toronto to interview legendary producer Bob Ezrin. I had had Bob Ezrin on my Sirius XM show on Volume, which, again, many of these interviews, including this one, originates from. You can hear that show live and hear these interviews live as they happen and even call in and get involved in them. That show happens live Monday through Friday from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Channel 106 Volume on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio. And then the show replays every night, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Then it goes on the Sirius XM app. And then many of the interviews, not all, but some, make their way onto the Eddie Trunk Podcast anywhere from 2 weeks to a few months after they originally air. So if you want to get this stuff fresh, live as it happens, and you can listen to Sirius XM or get a subscription. If not, eventually some of the bigger ones make their way here to the podcast. Now, in the last few weeks, we've had 2-3 guests in one episode. This week, I'm only bringing you one guest, and that's because it's a major one, and that's because I did my entire show with Triumph. So the entire interview that happened that day in Toronto is coming your way for this week's podcast. But as I was saying earlier, I went to Toronto. I had Bob Ezrin on my show to talk about Kiss Destroyer on its 41st anniversary. And I only had 10-15 minutes with Bob that day. And of course, I would have loved to have had more time. And we talked about getting more time at some point. And then Bob emailed me and he said, hey, if you would be willing to come to Toronto, perhaps we can do this. Now, I was unaware at the time that Sirius XM had a studio in Toronto. I found out that they did. And Sirius XM said to me, yeah, we'll send you there to do a special with Ezrin. So I was flying to Toronto to interview Bob Ezrin and have him sit in on my entire show, which he did. And like I said, maybe I'll post that audio even as soon as next week, because that is also a fascinating, compelling interview. But when I decided I was going to go to Toronto, a city I'd never been to, by the way, which is odd considering I live in New Jersey, which I think is only like 8-9 hour drive, maybe hourly flights. But for whatever reason, I never went to Toronto until this trip. But when I decided I was going to go for Ezrin, I started thinking, okay, what else can we do? Can I add some other interviews on and extend the trip a little bit? So I'd originally, of course, thought of Rush, because when you think of Toronto and you think of rock bands, you think of Rush, right? Ironically, though, Rush were coming to New York at the time I was going to Toronto, because they were getting ready to come down and take part in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction of Yes that Geddy and Alex did. So we literally were like ships passing in the night there, and I didn't get a chance to connect with those guys in Toronto. And then my thoughts quickly went to, wait, what about Triumph, the other great Canadian Toronto trio? And I know Mike Levine and have known Mike for many, many years. He's been on my radio shows countless times. Same with Rick Emmett. Gil Moore I met but didn't really know all that well up until this interview, when I really had a chance to spend some time with him. And for the longest time, I had been asked, and still to this day, on my shows or through my email or through my social media, hey, what's going on with Triumph? And the answer has consistently been the same from me. They are retired. They've been very open about the fact that they are done. Rick Emmett isn't. Rick consistently plays and tours and releases records, but the other guys have been retired. So I wasn't sure if they were going to be receptive to doing an interview or not, considering that most bands do interviews when they have something to promote, and Triumph doesn't. But I sent an email to Mike Levine, who got back to me. I told him the idea. I said, listen, this would just be a chance to reconnect with your fans and let them call in and talk to you and give a little history lesson and then talk a little bit about what's going on now and what you guys are up to. And if all three of you will come together, let me know. And that was big in and of itself, because Triumph, there was a time where they did not get along. Rick Emmett was kind of on the outside. But Mike Levine got back to me like 24 hours later. He said, you know what? I talked to Gil. I talked to Rick. We're in. Let's do it. So there was a studio that we rented in Toronto. We got together and we did this interview you're about to hear live on my Sirius XM show from Toronto. We had a tremendous time. It was great seeing the guys. But I had to be very honest with my audience leading up to this interview, because there were a lot of people that assumed, because these guys were coming together and coming on my show, they were going to make some sort of grand announcement, like a reunion, an album, something. So I had to be very upfront with everybody, and I consistently was, in saying, hey, listen, this was my idea. I pulled these guys together. This wasn't them calling me wanting to do this because they have some sort of thing to promote or some sort of announcement. And true to form, as you're about to hear in this interview, they are done. And I've said this 1,000 times. I would much rather have bands be done and remember them being strong than have bands do reunion shows or reunion tours, not really into it, not as good as they once were, going through the motions, not the same energy, not the same ability. So even though I am also a Triumph fan and would have loved to have seen some more stuff from them in the last 20 years beyond a couple of shows, I respect bands that do this. Leave the legacy intact. I mean, if they were to come back and they're not as good as they once were, and it would be highly unlikely that they would be, it's the first thing that happens. Everybody talks about how they can't do it anymore, how they're not good anymore, how they can't hit the high notes, they can't play anymore. So these guys are being brutally honest, and I give them all the credit in the world for it. Gil Moore says in the interview you're about to hear, it would take him like 6 months to get close to playing shape again. Not to mention that, of course, he's also a lead vocalist in the band. So I respect guys that know when to say when. And Gil is doing some great stuff, which you'll hear about with his studio. Mike Levine, if you saw the picture I tweeted out when I did this, and I'll probably tweet it out again to promote this being on the podcast. But when you look at the photo, Mike Levine had just come from spending the entire winter in Jamaica at his home there. You couldn't see a guy there. You couldn't see a guy more retired than Mike Levine in that picture. He's tan. You know, he couldn't, he's done. So they had a great run, and, you know, you never say never, but I get where they're coming from, and you'll sense it in this interview, exactly where they're at in their lives right now. And again, Rick Emmett is clear to make sure everybody knows, hey, I'm still out there. I'm still playing gigs. I'm putting out records. So Rick is still active, but the other guys, I mean, they're on to other phases of their life, and good for them. Some great records they gave us, some great live shows as well. We cover all of that, a little bit of history, and then I give the audience, the radio audience, many phone calls to talk to Triumph, which you will also hear in this interview because, again, it originated on my radio show. That's why you're getting to hear the calls. So a lot of fun, and I really thank Mike, Gil, and Rick for doing this because, as I said, it's incredibly rare for artists to want to do interviews for no reason whatsoever. Most of them don't like doing press, and they don't do things like this unless they have something to promote or sell. And Triumph literally didn't have anything. They just thought it would be fun to connect with their fans and do an interview with me, and it certainly was. So there you go. That's what you got coming up. A big one for you that you've been waiting for. If you don't have Sirius or XM and did not hear this interview, I reunited the three original members of Triumph, and you will get that entire interview here on the Eddie Trunk podcast. So let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll get right into it with the guys next.
The Eddie Trunk podcast.
Well, there's something about TrueCar a lot of people don't know, and that is that using TrueCar can also help you buy a used car. In fact, there are over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. Whether you're looking to buy new or used, you can get upfront pricing, information that empowers, discounts off the list price for used cars, and a better buying experience through our TrueCar certified dealer network. There's over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. And you'll see what other people paid for the car you want so you can know what a fair price is and feel confident. With TrueCar, you can connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing so you can enjoy a quick, easy buying experience. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the new or used car you want. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
I'm John Horn. I'm the host of Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. I'm here with our very first guest, Rainn Wilson.
Hi, John. It looks like I'm the first guest on the Geffen Unclothed. Unscripted. Unscripted. Yeah, let's go with that.
A marriage made in heaven, I guess.
Or Westwood.
Tune in for some of our exciting upcoming guests, David Copperfield, Neil LaBute, Neil Patrick Harris, Josh Gad, Rita Wilson, and many more. Be sure to download new episodes every Wednesday on the Podcast One app and on iTunes. And don't forget to rate, review, and share.
And I'm Rainn Wilson, the first guest.
You are first guest.
This was a huge mistake.
Geffen Playhouse Unscripted.
Huge mistake.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
All right, as promised, from Toronto, an interview that aired live on my SiriusXM show Volume, which is on daily, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, live on Channel 106 Volume. The three members of Triumph reunited in their hometown of Toronto, Canada. I want to thank everybody at SiriusXM Canada for their assistance in this, and I'm sure you guys are going to enjoy this. Remember, If you want more information about things coming up on the podcast or on me, social media, Twitter, at Eddie Trunk, perhaps what I'm most active on, Facebook, Instagram, at Eddie Trunk, eddietrunk.com, the website. Trunk Report is the blog. All my appearances are on the homepage. Just a little over a week away, hosting M3, Columbia, Maryland, Rocklahoma coming up. Broadcast from Tulsa and hosting gigs at the IDL Ballroom in Tulsa with Dokken and Tom Kiefer, all of it on the homepage of my site, as well as everything else as it comes in. But without further ado, I bring you the reunited triumph for the Eddie Trunk Podcast this week. Enjoy, everybody. I am extremely excited, as I know the audience is, to welcome all three original members of Triumph to the studio. The big audience of one is clapping. And we have, let me go from my left around the table here. We have a very tan and bronzed, just back from Jamaica, Mr. Mike Levine. Good to see you, Mike.
Eddie, always a pleasure. It's been way too long.
It has been. It has been too long, and it's great to see you, and thank you for doing this. And you were the facilitator. I started with you, and you put the word out to the guys, and they didn't hang the phone up on you.
No, they did not. Actually, Rick tried, but we wouldn't let him. And by the way, how come you get the high-class water and we get the President's Choice?
Because I bought it.
Oh, I see.
I had to go stop at the supermarket and buy it myself.
Just wanted to ask.
Yeah. Looking straight ahead is Mr. Rick Emmett. Good to see you, Rick.
Nice to see you too, Eddie.
Thank you for doing this. Much appreciated.
My pleasure.
And over to my right here, the bionic man, Gil Moore, is here.
Nice to see you, Eddie. It's always a pressure.
Gil, you have a... How long have you had hearing issues? Because you have a hearing device on the table. That's something to do with your career, maybe?
Yeah, just a bit. Yeah, talk to Neil Peart; he'll tell you the same story.
Yeah, I bet. Well, we're here with the members of Triumph, and I know, as I was telling you guys off the air a little while ago, ever since I've been doing this radio show for the longest time, my audience has consistently called up and said, what's going on with the guys in Triumph? What is Triumph doing? Where are the guys in Triumph? So when I found out I was coming to Toronto, I said, well, how about I try to get the three guys in Triumph together again to talk about what they're all doing. Rick, you were on my show not too long ago.
I was.
You just released a record that you guys, Gil and Mike, are both on, and we covered that a little bit. But first, I guess we'll start with you, Mike. How long has it been since you guys have done, beyond appearing on Rick's record, how long has it been since the three of you guys sat for an interview and did radio together? Has it been a while?
I think the last time we did something was with BC. We did Rockline out of Toronto.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in Bob Coburn. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. How long ago would that have been?
That had to be, Jory was with us, Vendetta. If we had dinner, I don't know, 5 years ago maybe?
5 years ago.
Yeah.
Do you guys see each other on a fairly regular basis now? Do you guys all interact? Do you know?
We have an annual get together right around Christmas, and like the song that I wrote on my album Grand Parade, I sort of based it on the idea of us. We get together and we go for dinner and we sit and have a few drinks and tell tall tales and hey, remember the time. So we at least do that once a year, you know.
So it's kind of like the Triumph sometimes. Christmas party.
Yeah, kind of.
We used to do it every quarter, you know, and somehow we got it, and then it was semi-annually, and then it was Christmas.
Yeah.
Gil, do you enjoy those get-togethers?
Well, yeah, and I see Rocket a lot because he's at the studio from time to time doing various things. And, you know, Mikey and I talk in the evenings. And if I ever go downtown or he ever comes to Mississauga, I get to see him. So,
and your studio, of course,
we see each other quite a bit.
Your studio, of course, is Metalworks, which is, is it doing well? You hear so many things about studios these days and how it's a struggle for some of them to keep going, but you have a big operation there from what I understand.
Yeah,
how's
let me
it going?
Phone in and see if we're going bankrupt this afternoon. I'm not sure.
Is it that bad, Gil?
Oh, Eddie, let me tell you how bad it is. No, Metalworks has branched out over the years. You know, we have a big live division that does concerts and is touring and stuff like that. And we have a school as well. We've got over 200 students in our school.
Oh, wow.
You know, we've been lucky because of guys like Drake, you know, that have come through and, you know, got started. Weekend came through and he was started out kind of here at Metalworks. So we've been kind of blessed with big artists. We had Justin Bieber in last year. So
you have a lot of artists at Metalworks that aren't metal.
Once you're been doing it for so long, people can't get away from you. You know, you're there like a bad, you know, restaurant. I hate that place, but it's the only place that's open for 40 years, so I'm going to keep going, you know?
I think the metal refers to platinum.
Yeah.
Is what I think it refers to.
Yeah. But, you know, as a kid, when I would see Metalworks on Triumph Records, I'm like, wow, they're so metal. They even have a studio called Metalworks, you know? That was always my impression. Now you just shattered that idea. Telling me The Weeknd and Justin Bieber were in your studio.
Thanks for that. Guns N' Roses were there. Does that make you feel better?
I mean, I'm going to hear Slayer recorded there, damn it. Oh, boy. So, all right. So let's talk a little history here. And as I told my audience, because they've been calling me forever about Triumph, and I want a lot of this show to be the audience and letting your fans talk to you. But, you know, this, I just realized this is my first ever time in Toronto. Just the other day, I had to call my dad last night because I couldn't remember if I had ever come here before. We had come on family trips, and he said, "No, that was Montreal." So I've never been to this city. If you can, let's go down memory lane to the beginning, to when you guys first came together in this city. And Rick, you were already in a band, right? And Gil and Mike approached you. Is that how it all went down?
Yeah. And this came in. So I was playing in a place called the Hollywood Tavern out on Queensway in the west end of the city. And they came one night and offered me that night. Do you remember I did some sort of flying kick and my shoe came off? And you guys, there was always stories about, oh, the night you came and we saw you kick your shoe off. Anyways, they made me an offer. And then, you know, a few weeks later, we got together and met in Gil's basement and had a, you know, sort of jam session. They showed me contracts that they had for gigs and stuff. And I went, oh, okay, I'm in. Yeah, so.
And things happen pretty quick for you guys once you put this thing together, right? I mean, there was things started moving quickly, did they not?
Well, you know, that's in the eyes of the beholder who's counting time, you know.
So we're talking, well, when you first approached Rick and put the band together, what year were we talking about? 75, was it?
75, yeah.
Yep. 75.
Summer of 75, first gig was in September.
That's right, it was. Yep. 75.
Simcoe High School or something.
Yep.
So I recall. Well, back in those days, there was a circuit you could play that were like high school, all high schools had budgets in Ontario here for concerts. So everybody had some kind of a convener or something that would be hiring bands every month. And so that was how we started.
And then where does it go from there, Gil? You start shopping a record deal?
Yeah, well, Mike was he was a real sophisticated guy for a musician back in the day, and you know he'd worked in the record industry a little bit while he was still playing. So Mike got us a deal with a small label called Attic Records.
Uh-huh.
And you know, we were out, you know, hustling through the, you know, bars and high schools, and you know, I think we got lucky very quickly. You know, we got an import record that took off in Texas, and next thing you know, we were headlining a show down there that we didn't probably deserve, but we were shoved in the spotlight, and we didn't choke. And the next thing you knew, we were semi-legit. We were in America, and we were, you know, talking to all the big agents, and we got out of the Ontario scene pretty quick and spent more of our career in America than we did in Canada.
The first record was in the beginning, correct?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That record was never really properly released in America for a little while.
Just an import.
It was on import. Why do you think it gravitated toward Texas? Was there somebody there playing the band that was resourceful, looking for new bands at the time?
It was...
Joe Anthony and Lou Roney at Kiss FM really were the guys that picked it up. And I think it was a lot of it was to do with Rush. They loved Rush. And, you know, it was just a coincidence. Moxie as well at the time. They were playing Moxie. And we were kind of right behind those two bands. And I think they maybe took an extra look at the record because we were from Toronto and we were hard rock. And
well, let's tell the real truth. Is that these guys were in cahoots with the local concert promoter.
Oh, okay.
And Joe. All right. So they, you know, they got a piece of the concert. So they beat the hell out of a record. And then get the band to come and play.
Right.
Is what they did. But the station simulcast AM and AM FM from noon to 6 p.m. and then went religious.
Oh.
And it was like a heavy metal show. I said, and Joe used to, it was amazing. I sat with him one day. He put a record on. Let's put this one on. And he puts a record on. And he goes, oh, that's crap. And scratches right across. Throws it against the wall.
Those were the good old days.
I was going to say. I mean, those certainly were. So was the arc of the band as it was, you know, when you first started out? I mean, were you guys pretty happy? Was there a lot of struggle back then, or was it did it move at a pace you guys were all pretty comfortable with?
I remember a certain period of time, my wife and I were buying our groceries with our credit card. Like, that's, I remember that, because we were, that transition from being a Canadian bar band to becoming a touring, you know, based on your own music kind of band. Like, in the early days, we played Zeppelin sets in bars, and then, and we could make good money, but there was a scene that existed at the time. You guys remember, like, Liverpool, and they would play Beatles stuff, and, right. and they could make great money, but they were never going to become, you know, something that would break out of a regional kind of a market thing. So we said, okay, we got to stop. You guys remember the first gig at the Olympium in Etobicoke? It was like a place.
That was the first Triumph gig?
Well, it was the first time we said, okay, no, not a high school, not a bar. We're going to play a hard ticket concert kind of a thing. We're going to do this. We're going to promote the show. And that was the first one we did. But that was a lean time. But the fact that we proved ourselves.
Yeah.
And
we stopped playing bars and high schools in the Toronto area.
Yeah.
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 For like 3 months.
And one of you should tell the story of like Massey Hall and all of that.
Like, you know, I went by there last night just to see it because I've heard so much about it. I know Rush did All the World's a Stage there. I just took a picture of the marquee because I had never seen it before. And I heard it's actually being renovated right now. They're doing some work to it. But
yeah. Slate gave him some dough.
Yeah. Dean Cameron's like, we went begging to Gary.
Did, good job.
Yeah, he did a great bit.
We're getting some inside Canadian politics right now, apparently, with Rick and Mike. But
sorry.
Yeah, but that, did you guys play Massey Hall that early on?
We never did. Mm-hmm. Gil should tell the story because Peter Goddard was a part of it. So you tell that story.
Yeah, we were booked to play Massey Hall, and you know, then the fire marshal found out about our track record.
What year are we talking here now, Gil?
70, I'm going to guess.
Eight
or seven. I'm not sure which.
Eight, I think.
Yeah. Maybe. So that early on, there was still a big show going on with Triumph?
There was always.
Yeah.
Always.
From the beginning, you had a big show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that was the problem, because that was the good news and the bad news, because we'd, you know, scorch high school stages, and then the principal would write a letter to the board. Well, these guys are really ripping up our school. Yeah, we're going to have to refinish the floor after they left.
I want to make it clear, this was Gil Moore's band. All that stuff was Gil Moore's band. We're going to have flamethrowers. We're going to have, live tigers are going to come jumping out of cages. Yeah.
So poor old Massey Hall here, you know, CPI was Michael Cole back in the day, you know, put the show on. And the tickets went boom right out of the gate. We had great ticket sales. And then the fire marshal came in and took a look at what we were going to do. And he said, I want to do a test with these guys. So we sent our pyro down there. The next thing you know, oh, no, there's going to be no Triumph at Massey Hall anytime soon. So our manager at the time is kind of downhearted because we just got the boot from Massey Hall. They're just going to refund the tickets. And I said, well, let's not refund the tickets. Let's just move it to Maple Leaf Gardens. And of course, Michael Cole rightly said, are you guys out of your minds? That's never going to happen.
Too big, right?
Yeah.
At that point, you couldn't fill it.
Well, Massey Hall's 2,715, I think, seats. We'd sold about 1,700 out of the gate, so it looked like it would sell out. But 2,700 is one thing. You know, the Gardens is a hockey arena. And, you know, Steve and I sort of just said to Michael, this is really good news. Let's just publicize the fact that this is the show that's too hot for Massey Hall. And one of the writers for the Star at the time, who was my piano teacher when I was, 7 or 8 years old, Peter Goddard, who we're working with now on our movie, by the way. Peter wrote...
There's a Triumph movie?
Yeah, there's a Triumph movie.
Oh, coming. We'll get to that. Okay, great.
So Peter writes a story, literally says, the show that's too hot for Massey. He puts it on the a blurb on the front page of the Toronto Star, and then inside the paper was a bigger story about it. And CPI went along with it. Michael Cole said, I'm crazy. I don't know why I'm doing this. I should never have listened to you guys. But the next thing you know, we actually had really good numbers. We didn't sell out the Gardens, but we substantially filled it. And it looked to everybody like we did.
They did a concert bowl thing where we only had to do half the building.
Right, right.
And the good news was our managers had the wherewithal to get four American record labels to come up and see the band, one of whom was RCA. And they signed us. And boom, now we got a record deal in America.
So
and
wait,
away we
what,
go.
What record was out when you did that? Was that Rock and Roll Machine? Was it the second record?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You guys are in an arena, although it's curtained, but still an arena. Putting on a big show on a second record without even really a major label record deal.
Yeah, and the record companies were scratching their heads going, how is this possible? And Michael Cole after the show went, how is this possible? Right? And then he went, hey, let's do a tour across Canada. Let's do arenas everywhere. So, you know, the whole CPI chain got behind us in Canada and promoted us right across the country. And in America, we got the deal with RCA. The next thing you knew, we had an American agent and we had a first tour of America. And we didn't start playing bars or anything. We started out headlining theaters like the Stanley Theater in Pittsburgh and the Aragon Ballroom in Chicago. And, of course, Texas, it's taken off at this point. So we had three or four venues we could play down there. And then the Midwest filled in, like Louisville, Kentucky, and Indianapolis. And just it kind of just snowballed.
You guys mentioned that you had a big show right out of the gate. How were you able to afford putting that together? Did you borrow money? Had you saved money? I mean, that's a hard thing to do. I mean, where did the resources come from to, as a baby band, come out of the gate with pyro and all these things?
We borrowed money from the Toronto Musicians Credit Union.
Is the Toronto Musicians Credit Union.
Yeah.
And that just, is that just a bank that helps fund credit union?
Yeah, it was a credit union that was affiliated to the Musicians Union.
So you took a loan.
Yeah.
You took a loan.
We borrowed the money. We had to pay it back.
And how much did you have to borrow? Do you remember?
$10,000.
$10,000, yeah.
And what did that buy you at that time?
Bought us pyro.
Yeah, I'll figure that's like $150,000 today or $200,000.
We got a big tractor for the trailer for a tractor trailer, and we'd fill that with crap. And when I say crap, there were things like we'd have giant PA stacks, but some of the things didn't necessarily have speakers in them. We had a lot of lights, but they weren't all necessarily plugged in and all working, you know. Yeah. Yeah, it was a show.
Gil, were you the guy behind the driving aspect of the show part? Were you the one that was pushing that?
Well, I had a kind of a, you know, when I was in my teens, I had this hokey pokey little sound and lighting company. And that's actually how Mike and I got working together, because he rented one of my sound systems that didn't work.
Yeah.
And then he didn't pay me.
Mike's still looking for a refund.
I spent more time driving to Gil's house getting new trainer amplifiers.
So, you know, that was kind of like a fledgling like kid company, you know, that you run from your parents' basement. But that gave me the background. I love the audio. I love sound. I still do.
Yeah.
That's why I'm in it, you know, as an adult. But I guess that's where we got a lot of the stuff. And Mike and I borrowed this money from the credit union, which we bought, a bunch more stuff with. And it was kind of ragtag, but it worked.
Clearly worked. We're going to talk more about the evolution of Triumph with Mike Levine, Rick Emmett, Gil Moore, the original three members of Triumph. And we are going to take your phone calls, a few more things from me as we talk a little bit of Triumph history here. And we'll continue doing that. And we'll include you in it right after we take this break.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Casper Mattresses, everybody. I got one. They're amazing. They're the online retailer of premium mattresses that you can get for a fraction of the price. I'm telling you, these are awesome. They come in a box. The shipping is free. The mattresses are hybrid mattresses. They combine premium memory foam with latex foam. And they've been named one of Time's best inventions of 2015. Now, even if you buy a great mattress that's not a Casper, a lot of times you see people, they're tying them to the top of their cars and it's a big pain in the neck. Casper, you don't have to deal with any of that. First of all, buying the mattress is completely risk-free because they offer free delivery and returns within a 100-day period. So there's nothing to lose. And statistically, lying on a bed for 4 minutes in a showroom has no correlation to whether it's the right bed for you. So Casper has made this totally risk-free, and they understand the importance of truly lying on a mattress and really spending some time on it, okay? And then if you don't like it after 100 days, shipping everything totally free, amazingly priced. They're incredibly engineered mattresses. Like I said, I have one myself. My son loves it. They're one of the most awarded mattresses of the decade. And again, you just open this thing up, it just pops out of the box, you drop it on your box spring, you're done. It's really, really awesome. Great if you have a shore vacation house, or great as your main everyday mattress, because they really are that comfortable. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase. Here's what you need to do. Visit CasperTrial.com/trunk, T-R-U-N-K, and use promo code 50SLEEP, 50SLEEP. Terms and conditions apply. Again, $50 off, and it's totally free. If you don't want it, send it back. Won't cost you a penny. $50 off any mattress. CasperTrial.com/trunk. Promo code 50SLEEP. You will love Casper mattresses. Check it out. Nothing to lose.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Talking a little bit about the history of Triumph, and during the break, Mike was still commiserating and giving Gil shit because that PA that he rented from him didn't work 45 years ago.
We're going to see about that later. We're going to talk about that when we're not on the air.
Send you an invoice.
Yeah, okay.
Somebody said there was a good story that we had to make sure we get during the break about something. Do you remember?
Mike's
car.
Mike had a car.
What a classic.
Mike, go ahead. Please indulge us.
Fess up.
Okay, it was a long time ago.
Yes, it was.
Even before my time, I think.
Yeah, long before your time. And I had no dough. And I rented it. I had no wheels, so I rented a car from this guy, Bob MacArthur, MacArthur's Rentals. And all the only cars he had were ex-cop cars. But they were painted black, except for the doors were white, and it said resale on the side of the door. And that's what I drove around. So when I went out to Gil's place to pick up lousy PA parts, I went at my resale vehicle.
Oh, if we only had some footage.
Oh, I'd kill for a photo of that.
It was a classic.
Speaking of footage, did I not hear somebody fill us in? Gil, you mentioned a Triumph movie. Tell me about that, a documentary?
Well, yeah, it's sort of been in the throes of doing it for about 4 years, but Peter Goddard, who we mentioned earlier, has scripted it. Don Allen's the director, and Marty Katz is the producer. And it's a sort of a life and times of, of Triumph, but it's also about the life and times of, you know, the 80s and rock and roll in North America. It culminates sort of with our performance at the US Festival for Steve Wozniak on Heavy Metal Sunday. Mm-hmm. And it talks a lot about the technology of music at the time, you know, the change to, computerized lighting and moving lighting and all that sort of stuff, because we were considered to be at the forefront of some of the production aesthetics that are common, you know, today. So
yeah, we used to win awards.
For your stage shows.
Innovators.
So the film's going to be touching on the sort of things that you innovated in stage production, as well as the whole history of the band. Are we going to get that as well? Like the arc of the band up to that point?
Yeah. The whole arc of the band is in there, and in Triumph's the backbone of the story. But, you know, to try to make it more interesting than just a story about Triumph, the way they've written it is to just include, you know, what it was like to be in that time frame, listening to music, you know, particularly the rock genre. And, you know, what was going on culturally at the time as well. You know, the evolution of the computer, the personal computer that was invented, really impacted music. So it's something that not a lot of people know. We had trusses that were actually running off one of those original Macintosh 2Cs.
Really?
Yeah, it's hard to believe. We still have the computer. You know, it's an antique now, but it was quite interesting, some of the stuff that was going on. So they're going to try to tie that into the movie. And then the production of the film itself is going to be very high-tech with a bunch of interactive elements to it. So it's going to be kind of a techie edge to the film as well.
So when's the target date for people to be able to see that?
I'm thinking probably 2018. Okay. You know, most of the funding is put together now. There's a few more, business deals that are being made kind of behind the scenes, but that's what we're looking at. And a lot of the footage, of course, is in the can because a lot of it's historical.
When we talk about the arc of Triumph, and I know we got people on hold and we're going to get your calls, I promise you guys, so sit tight for a second. But when we talk about the arc of this band, we talked about the early days and those first two records we touched on, and then, of course, it progressed. And I, you know, my first experience being a kid growing up in the U.S. was seeing and hearing about Triumph, because you were really one of the first bands I ever saw on this new channel at the time called MTV. And you had had those performance videos, which I think were... Well, Lay It on the Line was one. I think Hold On was one, if I'm correct. And those were... So you guys came at a time just as this channel MTV came on and then had the... I guess the vision to shoot some songs and talk about how that all came together.
That was the Just a Game album. That was our third album in Canada, which then was the second album in the States. And so, like, your experience of, you know, getting to know Triumph from MTV, there was people that were just a little ahead of you in the States. They would have heard us from the whole thing of album radio playing Lay It on the Line and Hold On, and that would have been 79, yes? Yeah. So that was a little bit before, but we're signed to RCA Records, and RCA Records, of course, is a very large selling of TVs and, you know, microwaves. Okay, no, I'm making jokes now, but you know what I mean.
Right.
So one of the things was that the RCA said, we got this newfangled thing, VCRs, and we want to compete against, what was the Sony one? Betamax. So they say, we want to put these machines in all the, we need some stuff. And so Mike cuts a deal, and we go to a soundstage in Kleinberg here in Canada, and we did in one afternoon and evening, like, Hold On, Lay It On, was it four? Moving On, Lay It On the Line, Hold On. I think it was three. I think there was only three.
Yeah, because we had to fire, what's his name, the director, midway through. Yeah. He freaked out.
Wasn't there a video? Did you guys do a video? I know it was from an earlier record, but the Rocky Mountain Way cover. Was there a video for that?
I don't think there was. No.
I just try and remember. But I remember seeing the videos because I remember being so pissed off because when I got the record, the video for Hold On had a huge chunk cut out of it.
Right.
You know, because it was an edited version of the song. I was like, oh. So every time I saw the video, I was so mad that extra part wasn't in there.
You and me both, Eddie. that was the thing. How do you make the transition from album radio to you know, AM radio, where, oh, so they would edit songs. Don't edit it. So anyways, the point is RCA had these machines. They wanted stuff so that people could walk into record stores and there would be a loop and there's Triumph playing those songs on those machines. And so then up comes MTV and they're desperate for footage. Like, they can't play Mike Nesmith videos all day long. And so they're going, what do you got? And so we gave them that. And before you know it, and I think, by the way, I think we invented the money shot, which is to say there was one moment in Lay It on the Line where I was singing at the mic and it was the transition from the quiet part of the song to when the song, boop, 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 psh, the drum fell, and a flash pot went off behind my head with a fairly tight shot, and it just like wiped out the screen. So it wiped it out, and then it came back, and there's Ricky out of the explosion, and it was like, what a shot! And it was just pure dumb luck that we had it.
So you had like a primitive version of like a soft lens focus thing going on.
It was just like, here's Rick singing, and then all of a sudden, wham! And a huge explosion, and then here comes Rick back out of the flames.
Yeah. How quick did you feel that impact? Because a lot of bands did feel an immediate change in when MTV started to emerge, and all of a sudden you guys start popping up on TV screens all over America. I mean, I imagine you felt an immediate hit from that in a good way, right?
Oh yeah. You know, primarily before MTV, our audience was male.
Yeah.
You know, young and you know, rock guys.
Right.
And then because of MTV, we started attracting very attractive females.
That didn't suck.
And guys would always go where the girls were, right? So we had the guys, then we got the girls, then we got more guys, then we got more girls, and pretty soon it was arenas.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, you know, Progressions of Power, I Can Survive, I remember hearing that on the radio some in the U.S., and I Live for the Weekend and things like that. And I was, you know, the record that I was completely consumed was consumed with was Allied Forces. I mean, that was the one that put it over the top for me as far as I remember hearing my local radio station track that start to finish when it came out. And I mean, at that point, everything in Triumph Land is running at peak performance at that point. Would you say, Gil, was that pretty much the height of things, that and the couple records to come after?
Well, we were on a roll live, you know, because we were now had made it to the arenas, you know, around the United States and across Canada. And so the shows were doing great. But actually, the tours actually got bigger over the next few years. Every tour seemed to grow right until we quit touring. I mean, our largest tour was the last tour we did. But it was a good feeling at that time because it kind of felt like, okay. I remember one time at a radio interview, and it was a small market. It was in Fresno, but I was doing the interview with the jock on the air, and he said, you know what? You guys have gone from being, you know, needing to get on radio or trying to get on radio to being the sound of radio. Mm. And I thought, wow, that's an interesting comment to say that we'd become the sound of radio. So that was a kind of a watershed time frame, I think, for us.
How did you guys all individually handle the success of the band as it kept getting bigger and bigger? Did you all kind of keep it together? Did you go off the rails? Did somebody, you know, immediately get a drug problem?
Mike and Rick went to hell in a handbasket. I kept it together.
Kid was busy selling bootleg amps out the back of the...
Wait, do you guys remember that English tour when Gil was holding on to a fan on the ceiling in the dressing room? There might have been a little bit of drinking on that tour, Gil.
I don't remember that.
You know what? We weren't really...
But there's not... The point is there's nothing... There's no class to prepare anybody for going from a band playing clubs in Toronto to playing arenas, being on MTV, getting all this excitement and attention from fans, and then all this money coming in and all these things going on. I mean, some guys handle it well and some guys don't. How did you guys deal with all that?
First of all, we've gone through some stages where there were other managers that got involved with us, but then we would eventually fire them and they'd sue us, but we'd get rid of them. And the band was pretty much self-managed. So that was something that kind of kept it grounded. And then there was something that got said earlier when it was like Michael Cole going, this is never going to work. And, you know, and I think we always kind of felt like, this is never going to work, but let's do it anyways. And there was that kind of, I don't know, the blowing on the dice kind of, we're going to try, like the album was called Just a Game and it had the dice. And we really did kind of have a core philosophy that, you know, we're just going to, this is a wing and a prayer kind of thing, and we'll just keep riding it and see how it goes. So, and I never believed in the rock star thing, you know. We would travel. One of my favorite stories is we're walking through O'Hare, and here's Triumph. We're flying commercial. We're carrying our own bags. We got no road manager. We're coming down, and here comes Van Halen's entourage from the other direction, and they've got midgets that are carrying guitar cases, and there was
no brown M&Ms
women
anywhere.
Without their clothes, and David's out front. He's wearing huge sunglasses and a feather boa, and the two entourages go by. You know, we just go, yeah, okay, you know, like. We never really bought in on that level. You know, for us, it was about getting up and doing that 90 minutes every night, you know?
You touched on the US Festival a little while ago. Some memories of that, because you guys put out one of the first things, and there was a huge period of you know, nothing as far as Triumph activity, which we'll get into in a second. But one of the things that did come out, because Mike, I think you came on my show and did some promotion for it, was the US Festival performance, which you put out on DVD and CD a while ago. Talk about the experience of playing that and playing on Metal Day. And you guys had the foresight to carve out in your deal being able to control the footage of your performance, right? Because most bands can't and didn't.
That's true. Our agent, we had the best agent that made the deal, because he's the one that thought of it.
Yeah.
And said, hey, you know, we should have the rights to use whatever our own footage. We let them have the footage too. For I think they had one shot and a repeat, as I recall. Right, Gil? Yeah. And then we basically owned it after that, and nobody else did.
And the experience of actually playing the show, how many people were there on that Metal Day? Was it like 100,000 people or something like
God,
that?
Oh, God, no, way more than that.
More than 100,000.
Oh, yeah. The sort of the estimates are somewhere between, you know, 250,000 to 500,000, depending on who you believe.
Yeah.
But that was the largest show, I think, of all time in the United States.
On stage, you could only see humanity as far as your eye could go, like back and over the hills and out of sight. It was just people. It was a sea of people.
There's a lot of aerial footage of it, yeah. You know, so you can kind of see it's truly amazing.
And they couldn't go by ticket sales because the fans broke the fences down.
Right.
So it was like it was wide open, you know, because they just couldn't wait in line, so to speak, online to get their tickets or to get in or whatever. The fences came down, so nobody had a real accurate estimate.
Do you guys remember anything specific about the show and the performance itself? Was there anything beyond the mass amount of the crowd? Was there anything that stood out of the norm of the actual show itself?
There's a million things. Like, we flew in a helicopter because because of the traffic. So, when was the Kalamazoo show where we also did the helicopter? What year was that?
It was later.
Yeah. Okay. So it was the first time I got to fly in a helicopter.
It was the next year. It was 84.
Yeah. Okay. So first time in a helicopter. And then you go to the backstage area, and Van Halen had a compound. Do you remember? It was like they had a wall built of those kinds of sticks. It looked like something out of Lord of the Flies or something that was their compound. And it was like, oh, okay. They get a compound. You know, we had a nice trailer, and it was air conditioned and everything. But come on. Geez. You know. So, yeah, there's a thousand things. So Wozniak walked us up to the stage, and him and Gil were like arm in arm, and yeah, there was some crazy moments, and it was really hot. You remember that?
It was like hot and dusty.
Yeah, and the smog had blown up from L.A. and was sort of trapped in whatever that little valley area with the hills, and so it was like you run up and down the stage once, and it felt like you'd smoked a pound of hash. Like it was just your lungs were just. You know, so.
And we had flown in from. Didn't we play? We played a gig in Florida. We
played the T-ball. Yeah, the day before was ZZ Top.
The day before.
Oh man,
yeah.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, the Tangerine Bowl, and we swapped places with Sammy Hagar so we could make the flight.
Yeah,
we had to play earlier.
Wow.
And we went right from the stage in our stage clothes into the limo with our guitars into the airport, and we had to use rented gear in for the S Festival.
Wow.
I always wondered how you guys determined between, you know, having two lead singers in the band, Gil, you singing lead, and Rick, you singing lead as well. The decision on who sang the song, was it purely based on who wrote it, or how did you guys divvy that up?
It went through stages. Early on, if Gil wrote, you know, had a song idea, we'd work it up, and then he would be the vocalist for that song. So the first few albums. When did we get to the time when we were co-writing together and we would go across the Metalworks Plaza to, we'd rented a space. And, was that Thunder 7?
Before that.
Yeah?
I don't know. The song that stands out for me that we did like that was Fight the Good Fight. That's the one I remember doing like
yeah,
that.
But that was in the studio. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was in Metalworks.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there was one time where we rented the space across the parking lot. And we went in there with like a little four-track machine and we'd write every day. I think that was Thunder 7. But anyhow, that's what happened eventually. It was like it evolved to the point where we're writing together. And then, oh, you sing that line and then I'll sing this line. And then, yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about what happens when this whole sort of party comes to an end. And then there's this huge chunk of downtime. And then it was just short of 10 years ago that the band got back together and I hosted a show. You guys played it in Oklahoma at Rocklahoma. You played a show in Sweden Rock. That stuff has come out. I want to talk a little bit about that. And then I promise the very patient people on the phone that I will give you the rest of the show to fire away at Rick, Gil, and Mike. But I want to get my stuff done. I'm the one who flew up here to Toronto. I got a couple questions. All right. So I'm going to get one more, a little more from me. And then I'm going to turn the rest of the show over to you guys on the phones. I know the Triumph fans are chomping at the bit to fire away, and we're going to let you do that, I promise you. We'll come back. We'll take a break.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
BarkBox, where's all my dog lovers out there? Check this out. Every month, BarkBox picks the best all-natural treats and innovative toys to match a dog's unique needs. Even including stuff like allergies or heavy chewer preferences. All the edibles that BarkBox brings you are made in the USA or Canada, and they're 100% of the products that they bring you in these boxes. They're tested on animals, their own animals. BarkBox is a great way to try a variety of treats and toys from local and small businesses for your dog that you may not otherwise be able to find. And each month, there's a theme. Country Fair, Bark Ball, Pooh York City, Brooklyn hipster. New and unique toys. They continue to keep dogs engaged, interested, and happy. You guys will love this. There's free shipping on any BarkBox within the continental U.S. as well. You will absolutely love BarkBox. If you're a dog owner, it is a must. So what you need to do, if you want to try out BarkBox and get a tremendous deal, is go to getbarkbox.com/trunk, T-R-U-N-K, and you'll get a free extra month of BarkBox. An extra month free! Getbarkbox.com/trunk. When you subscribe, again, getbarkbox.com/my last name trunk, a free extra month of BarkBox. There's nothing to lose. This is an awesome thing. If you have a pet, if you got a dog, BarkBox, you'll love it. And you get a free BarkBox, a free month. Getbarkbox.com/trunk.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Gilmore, Mike Levine, Rick Emmett, nice enough to take some time out of their afternoon to talk to us and to talk to you shortly about the history of this great band. And we just learned there's a film coming, and we talked a little bit about the earlier history. But before we go to the calls, I just wanted to ask you guys about the end. When does it all start to sort of wind down for you guys? Where do the wheels start to come off? Where does the band start to kind of end its run?
I think, you know, we let the record company get too much in our face, and it caused some dissension, you know, amongst the three of us. You know, I guess it was Sport of Kings.
That was the album,
yeah,
for sure.
That we agreed to go to L.A. to record the bed tracks.
Cut the beds.
And, you know, Ron Nevison was hired as the producer, and Mike Klink was the engineer. And it just wasn't us anymore. You know, it's like, it was always the Three Musketeers in the studio, whatever. It was always just us.
You were feeling pressure from the label to do things you didn't want to do. Is that what was happening?
Yes and no. You know, eventually you got to play ball, right? I guess, you know, that's what we thought, that we had to play ball with the record company in order to get things, to keep things moving, you know, forward. And, you know, you piss off the record company, guess what happens to your records?
Right, you get buried.
You get buried, right. So we agreed to it, and it was a fucking disaster, really.
Making that record?
Yeah.
Yeah, Nevison didn't last, and he quit. Yeah. And then Klink took over, and he did a nice job, and, you know, in a tough situation, you know, stepping in and, you know, but that Sport of Kings wasn't really the band anymore. It was now we were chasing songs that we hoped would become home run kind of hits. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't really what the band was. When you look back on the history of Triumph and you say, okay, when would you choose the sweet spot? And we might differ between the three of us, but that Allied Forces album, when we built the studio and we were in there and we made that record, that to me, that was the sweet spot. We figured out what the band was. And, you know, songs like Magic Power and Fight the Good Fight, and, you know, that stuff was the heart of the band. And then by the time we got to Sport of Kings, it was like, what happened to the heart? Where's the heart? We couldn't find the heart anymore.
So what, did you tour on Sport of Kings?
Yeah,
we did.
Yeah,
you did. Yeah. And how was the vibe then? Was it, were you guys okay, or was it?
Yeah, we were okay on the road. I mean, it was fine, you know.
And then what happens when that tour ends?
Then we had to make another record, and that was not easy.
Yeah.
And was that the record you made without Rick?
No, there was Surveillance.
Oh, Surveillance. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But there was weird politics there too. Tom Trumbo came in to sort of co-produce, and he'd been the A&R man with the label, but he wasn't really going to be the A&R man after the record came out.
He was let go before the record.
Okay, so there was a weird transitioning power politics thing there.
But still getting, even though Sport of Kings was, from my recollection, was fairly successful, was it not, as far as sales, or no?
It was medium. It wasn't it was a gold record, but it was an effort to make it a gold record.
So going into Surveillance, are you still feeling the same sort of pressure from the label, or were there pressures within the band? I mean, what's the feel? Gil's nodding his head.
Well, you know,
it doesn't work too good on radio.
This is my nap time, so this is actually starting to nod off, Eddie. No.
The questions are getting too hard.
Yeah, that's a tough question. But you know, Rick said it best. You know, the air kind of got sucked out of the room at that point. You know, touring wise was great. Like the audience never let us down. So we went on the road and we have great shows. But you know, you thrive on the songs too. And we weren't liking the songs we were doing. So and we realized we're playing songs that people want us to play, meaning the label guys and producers, rather than, as Mike said, the Three Musketeers digging it out of the dirt, which is how we always did it. And it's a shame that, you know, that we did that. But, you know, you can't live twice. You live once. And those are the things that happen. And we got influenced. I think every band on the planet has suffered from the same thing. They get influenced. And, you know, somebody thinks they know a better secret sauce. And we're going to get these guys to do it my way. And they'll do much better. And for the most part, if you look at bands that do really well, they do well because they really did what came naturally to them, not what somebody manufactured for them.
Right. And we didn't have, we retired the audio illusion processor, which was the best toy we ever had.
What is that?
I have no idea what he's talking about, Eddie.
We had our tech guy, Dave Dixon, build this little box with one of those big red lights on it. And a switch.
Yeah.
And we'd put it onto whenever a record company guy came, A&R guy, wanted to come into Toronto to hear what we were doing, right? So we're in the mix process, I think, on Allied Forces. And the A&R guy from RCA, what was his name? Dan Loggins. Dan would have the sweater tied around his neck, you know, the tan and his tennis racket and his backpack and all that. And he came in, and I think it was Magic Power or whatever. I can't remember the song. He listened to me. He goes, "Geez, that's really great. But, man, I could really use just a little more snare drum, a little more, maybe some reverb on it or something." Right? And no problem, Dan. Dim the lights, turn on the audio illusion processor, and he's staring at the light. Right? And he's going, "Oh, that's way better." Okay, I get
a
it
light
now.
In the box. Yep. That's all. Oh, that's priceless. That's so good. Oh, my God. So eventually this ends with you leaving the band, correct, Rick?
Yeah. Yeah.
And your decision to
fall
do that.
Fall of 88.
Fall of 88.
Yeah.
And then you go off on your own thing. And then there was a long period of separation, was there not, with you and these guys?
Yeah. It's a couple of decades. And it didn't go very well for the first decade. It was, you know, it wasn't.
For you or them or both?
Oh, I'm sure for all of us. Right. You know, we weren't happy with each other. We weren't happy with, you know, the way it was playing out. And it took us a long time to sort of get back to the point where I was like, okay, you know, now we'll be human about this. We'll see if we can figure it out. Yeah, the thing, too, is that, like, when you have a fraternity, like a brotherhood kind of circumstance, and three guys have gone through this process that we've just described, you know, this history over 13 years, there's a lot of stuff there that becomes, you know, if you feel like somebody kicked the pins out from underneath it, that it hasn't turned out to be what you want it to be, then now there's a lot of damage, there's a lot of hurt. So that stuff takes a long time to kind of get past and grow up and realize, okay, what we did have was good. What has happened in the last while has not been good. Let's try and figure out how we get back to what's good, you know. So. Right. And that took a long time, but we eventually got there.
Well, you would go off and, you know, start a solo career, which you still maintain to this day, Rick.
Yeah.
Mike and Gil made one Triumph record with Phil X in place of Rick, who's now in Bon Jovi, replacing Richie Sambora. And heard from him the other day. He said, "Say hello to the guys." And then, of course, there would be that long period of inactivity, and then the band would come back into action and do these two live shows, Sweden and Rocklahoma, which have been shot and documented and released. And, you know, Gil, you've done the studio thing. And Mike, you've clearly hung out in Jamaica on the beach because you're tanned and relaxed. Way more relaxed and tanned than anybody should be.
Yeah, I'm on.
And that brings us up kind of doing a very Reader's Digest version to current times with this movie coming and everything else going on. And we should mention again, for people that don't know, Mike and Gil do appear. There is a Triumph reunion on record on Rick Emmett's new record.
Yeah,
where
Res
you guys
9.
All, on Res 9, where you guys all played together, which I imagine was a fun experience to get. Gil, you...
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Yeah. It was a lot of fun to get together and hang out in the studio and laugh. And, you know, when it's all over, I got to take 2 weeks off and then quit. But it was great while it lasted.
You guys ready? You ready to talk to your public? I've been hearing from people for years. What's going on with Triumph? So now, my audience, this is your chance to ask that very question. And we're going to start with Jim in Colorado. So let's just get this right out of the way, Jim. Fire away. Let's sort this
Man,
out.
The rock
once and for all.
Smiling on me.
Go I'm ahead, Jim. You're the first caller.
Right on. Hey, real brief. Suitcase Blues is the reason that at 54. I still own and play guitars. And second off, and most importantly, when does the tour start?
Any announcement you want to make here to the country, you guys?
Come on,
we're broadcasting to the U.S. and Canada. Is there any news that you want to make? I had to tell everybody leading into this interview, by the way, that I called you. You guys didn't call me, just so people didn't get the impression like the guys are calling Eddie to make a big announcement. So, you know, I guess thank you, Jim, for the call. And the obvious question here, it's been 8 years, 9 years since you played live. Is there any go around the horn? How does everybody feel? I know, Rick, you took this question on my show a month ago. But, I mean, you know, going around the horn, how do you feel about potentially doing something again as a band?
Well, I know how hard it was to try and get them just to come into the studio and play on one little ballad. So, and it's funny the guy mentioned Suitcase Blues, because the Grand Parade song on the album was a kind of a suitcase bluesy kind of thing. But it was even closer to the heart of the Triumph sort of experience, you know, in terms of the lyric and the content and everything, that sort of moody midnight thing. So it was hard. There was some bending of arms in order to try and get the guys to do just
that.
Oh, yeah. You weren't around when I was trying to talk him into it.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah.
You were easy.
He's talking about Gil. Gil was the problem.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
Gil, a lot of arm bending just to do one song. So you're not going on the road anytime soon, are you, bud?
Well, you know, let's look at it this way. Playing drums and singing at the same time, Eddie, it's kind of like being an electrician and a plumber. Sooner or later, you're going to have the 240 volts in one hand and the drain in the other hand. And then you know what happens? You've seen the Spinal Tap video. You know how it all ends for the drummer,
all the
right?
Drummers explode.
We've all seen that video. We know how it ends.
Mike, would you like to chime in on your thoughts about getting electrocuted or playing again?
I'll just let Gil carry that ball.
I think you'll let Gil go with that. Yeah. Is there a side of it that you like? Here's the thing: all three of you guys, you look great. You're clearly friends again. You're clearly having fun. You know, it's very obvious. I mean, is there a side of you that misses this? You know, just being in the same room together and having some fun. And you say you do it once a year for the holidays or whatever. But do you miss the camaraderie and the fun and the laughs and the memories?
Well. For me, I mean, I tour. I play lots of gigs. You know, people can go to my website and see, oh, hey, look, I didn't die.
Right. Rick knows the difference between the water and the electric. He's good.
Yeah. And, like, you know, I'm going to play a band gig on Friday. So I have a rehearsal in my house with three guys that I have a relationship with them, and it's a good one. And I enjoy it. It's not these guys. It's not the same sense of history, but I get my sort of connection, and I get that feeling of being part of a team, you know? So I would, you know, if these guys ever got to the point where they said to me, Rick, we miss you. We want to play with you. I would say, I'm in, I'm there. But, you know, I don't think they miss the playing as much as I do. You know, when I'm not doing it.
Well, Gil, do you miss playing? Do you play?
I don't play. I miss the camaraderie.
When was the last time you played drums?
Just playing on Rick's track.
Okay.
Right. Like, to me, you either do it or you don't do it.
Right.
So in order for me to play properly, I have to play every single day. That's the only way to be a musician. And, you know, I'm doing what I'm doing
with Metalworks, which is
your
something
studio
that I'm very, very passionate about. Well, and the school, too. You know, I've got all these kids now that have been graduating for 12 years that are out doing things in the music industry. And, you know, our live event team is doing big shows, and I go to some of the shows. It's a thrill. What do I miss about Triumph? I miss the jokes, the camaraderie. We were the one band that had humor as a core piece. Like, next to music, I would say humor was the glue. So when we were traveling, we'd be joking constantly cutting up, you know, in the dressing rooms, we throw stuff at each other, you know, and it's kids stuff, really,
right.
Locker room stuff, but
right.
In a good way.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, we weren't getting hurt or anything like that. We were just cutting up, having a blast. I really miss that. So if it was easy to turn it on, you know, like let's say I was Don Henley and, you know, you're playing boom, chick, boom, chick. Let me take a snooze. Boom, chick. Let me take another short nap. Boom, chick. That's one thing. But when you're going fubbada bubbada fubbada bubbada fubbada bubbada and you're singing.
Right.
It's a different deal.
How long?
So you can still do it.
Yeah,
I just heard you did it.
Yeah.
You know what? It wasn't too bad, was it?
No, it was
I do
good,
say
man.
So myself.
Mike, where do you stand on all of this? I mean, you've always been, and this was alluded to a few times during this conversation. You've always been sort of the business guy in Triumph. You have that. You have some music. You have music business history in your DNA. So from a business standpoint, I imagine that offers come your way for this band or through an agent every once in a while. Hey, play this festival. Do this. Would you ever get together for this? Do you see a scenario where this band plays again or no?
You know, it's, I think we had a song called Never Say Never, but it's getting awful close to that now.
Yeah.
You know, I really don't see it happening. But, you know, who knows? Who knows
what
the future
will bring?
What would
it take for it to happen? I mean, financial or just vibe or timing or what do you think? What would it take?
Well, we know how much work it is just to go and do a couple of one-offs like we did 10 years ago or 9 years ago. Now.
Right.
You know, it was a lot of work. And to do one-offs, you know, we get really substantial offers to go right. Do one-offs. But it's not worth it at the end of the day for the work.
That
involved.
Sweden show, we did 6 weeks every day. To get Gil back in shape. And it was maybe even a little longer than 6 weeks. But, you know, that's a lot of rehearsals,
yeah.
You know. But that's what got Gil back in shape to be able to play.
And that was nine years ago, and he's falling asleep already right now.
Well,
so
and he had no lunch, so his blood sugar's getting bad.
He's really bad when he doesn't have lunch. It was the same thing on the road.
Now that you mention it, can we take a break? Need a burger.
All right, let's get some more calls on here because we could pound away at that, but we kind of get the idea at this point, and we'll see what the future holds. Mike in Canada, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, first off, I just want to say hi to Rick, Gil, and Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
My first concert ever was seeing you guys at Maple Leaf Gardens with a no-name band called Honeymoon Suite. And that was amazing. I've been hooked since. My question for Rick is, you taught at Humber College here in the GTA of Ontario, but is all your catalog of the guitar player available for anyone, your columns?
Yes. They are. And I still teach at Humber. I was there yesterday doing my classes. So one day a week, you know, and I still love it. Would never let that go. Yeah, all of those columns got compiled into a thing called For the Love of Guitar. And it's available off my website. And you can get it as a download or you can get yourself a CD-ROM. Yeah. So, yep, rickemmett.com.
Good friend of mine, great chef here, Chef Eric in New Jersey. What's up, buddy? I finally got you in here with the Triumph guys. I know how excited you were for this.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, Eddie. I appreciate it. Looking forward to seeing you here at one of the restaurants. So, guys, I have to thank you for all your years of music and what you did for me as a kid, coming through some really tough things as a kid. And I wanted to thank you for that. And what led me to Triumph was actually my other favorite Canadian band, Rush. You know, another power trio, obviously, and you guys really got me through some tough times with songs like Never Surrender, Follow Your Heart, and I just wanted to say thank you, and the platform that Eddie has here to be able to connect with you guys is just phenomenal, so you guys rule. I hope, is there a possibility of at least an album? I know maybe it sounds like no tour, but maybe at least a little fresh music.
That would take Gil 2 years to get ready to do. If a tour took six months, I think Gil needs 2 years.
Gil, I'll be your drum tech, okay? I'll grab your arm.
Okay, buddy, if you'll do that, we're on.
I'm in. Toronto's like my second home. I do a lot of consulting up there for restaurants and catering companies, so I'm always up there. So I'm in. If that's going to make Triumph come back, even just in studio, I would do that in a heartbeat.
Well, you're a chef, and I'm hungry right now.
So. Give Andy your number.
He's a great chef.
He's got my number.
I got his number. He lives right by me. Thank you, Eric. Take care, buddy. If you're ever in Jersey, Mars Tap and Grill in Randolph. That's his spot. But he's a very accomplished chef and a good friend. And he's willing to drum tech just to get it between running two restaurants. Dan in Massachusetts. Go ahead, Dan.
Guys, I just want to say that it's so much, it's just so great and so much fun to hear you guys all together again. Thank you so much for doing this afternoon. We really appreciate it. And
Rick was just telling me how far he had to drive. I feel bad making him do it now.
So it's Eddie's fault.
It's my pleasure. And to get to hear people like you and say those things, it does our heart good.
Well, Rick, as you know, actually, the reason why I picked up the guitar 35 years ago was, was Triumph and your playing. And the question that I actually have for you this afternoon is, if you had to put just one song in a time capsule to be dug up 100 years from now that would best represent the sound and songwriting of the band, which song would each of you choose? And Rick, I know that you mentioned that Allied Forces and Fight the Good Fight, Magic Power, you mentioned a few minutes ago that really represents the heart of the band. But if just one song that you would want to be most remembered for and most proud of that really represents the band, I'm curious as to which song each of you would choose.
Wow. That's a tough one. You know, I think I'd probably have to go with Fight just because of what it is musically. Although, I don't know. If we're going to pick what's the one representative anthem, I would have to go with Magic Power. But I don't know. Fight maybe was the one that had the most Gil in a song where I wrote the lyric. So, but he wrote those melodic intro things. He wrote those that ba da 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 bum 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 ba do 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 do. That was his riff, you know. So I'd pick that one. Okay, on to you other guys now.
Yeah, what do you got? What's the definitive Triumph song, Gil?
I actually was going to pick the same song.
Yeah. Fight the Good Fight.
Yeah, for me, that would be the one.
And Mike?
Yeah, let's make it unanimous.
Wow.
I don't believe it.
That's amazing. We all agree.
We all agree on something.
There is hope, you guys. There is hope. We just saw the clouds part and sun start. Don't get crazy, but the sun's coming through. There could be hope here. All right, let's go to trying to get the people in waiting a really, really long time here. Let's get Curtis. No surprise, a lot of Canadian callers flooding our lines. Curtis, go ahead in Canada. You are on the air with Triumph.
What an honor. Thanks, guys. How you guys doing?
Great, Curtis. Thanks.
We're hungry.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, you're hungry. I don't have any food, but I do have a couple quick questions.
45 minutes and we're out of here. You'll be rid of me. I'll be on a plane going back to New Jersey. You can be rid of me.
Okay, I'll be really, really quick. I just want to say maybe this is more of a compliment than a question, but for years and years, there's always this rumor that if you could find where Rick Emmett lived, you could go up and knock on his door and he would come out and give you a beer and talk to you. And I think this is may have been more an embellishment. Maybe one guy did it, but this seems like a Canadian thing that Canadian musicians were always very open to their fans. And is there any truth to that, Rick?
I'd like to think that I remain a relatively accessible and humane kind of person, but there are limits. And I'm going to tell a quick story because there was once a young lady that my wife had gone off to work, and it's maybe, I don't know, 10 o'clock in the morning, ding dong at my front door, and I go, and this waft of perfume comes to, through the door when I open it, and I'm standing there in my robe, and I'm going, yeah? And she goes, oh, my God, I've been waiting for this moment all my life. And I go, what do you think is going to happen here? Like I said, how did you find where I live? And she had gone to, like, you know, and it was no secret that we lived in Mississauga. She'd gone to the Mississauga City Hall, and she'd paid so she could do a title search.
Oh, my God.
And so she found my address and then got in a cab and came to my house. And I said, I'm sorry, but, you know, you're going to have to leave. Like, I'm not going to invite you in for tea. I don't want any trouble. So, right. You know, bye-bye. So, years later... I'm not going to name names, okay? But a guy who's a fairly famous guitar player who had played in a fairly famous band, and now he's a guitar player that's touring with other guys, and I'm on a bill, and I'm talking with this guy backstage, and I tell him this story, and he goes, oh, my God, she knocked on my door. She came to my door. And I said, what did you do? He goes, I invited her in. I produced her album. I'm co-writing with her.
She's a musician?
Yeah. And I go, oh, my God. So I'm not going to, reveal names.
Were they, these are all Canadians, I'm assuming?
I'm not
asking you to name names, but the musician?
No, this was an American dude, and this was a West Coast kind of thing, but... You know, and the girl was actually East Coast. She originally started out of Massachusetts.
My gosh. So she crosses borders and everything.
Crazy, eh?
Wow.
That's a true story.
Wow. Anybody knocking on your door, Mike or Gil? Anything we need to know?
No, I have a big sign saying, stay off my land.
Let's go again. Canada representing your home turf here. Mark in Canada. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, Eddie, this is awesome. Thank you so much for getting these guys together again.
Oh, it's this Mark. Mark's a loyal caller and listener of my show. Good, Mark, thanks. I'm glad you got through. What's your question,
I wish I could have hooked up with you this time around, Eddie, but I think you'll be back to Toronto one day.
Well, the SiriusXM Canada folks have been nothing but great to me, and hopefully we'll be able to do more from up here for sure.
Okay, so I got a couple quick things. First of all, guys, I'm looking at a ticket stub from 1985, Thursday, April 11th, Maple Leaf Gardens. I sat in the Golds, and all I can say is you shook the shit out of Maple Leaf Gardens that night.
And by 85, they probably didn't have to curtain it.
No.
We might have done two nights.
It was so incredible. I'll never forget that show as long as I live.
Great. Yeah,
that was Thunder Thanks. 7 tour, right?
Yeah, we played
that
two
was
nights.
Thunder 7.
Yeah.
All right, okay, Mark, get your question in because we got a ton of callers here.
Okay, Gil, real quick. I'm a huge Deep Purple fan, and I lived around the corner from Metalworks in Mississauga for many, many years. And when Ian Gillan did his Gillan's Inn, I guess you had all the guys there, like Tony Iommi, Satriani. What was that like?
Well, I love Ian Gillan's voice, and I love the song Smoke on the Water, which he re-recorded at Metalworks. So it was a lot of fun, you know? He was a great, great guy, good sense of humor, and love Ian Gillan.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate the phone call. We got to take a break. We're going to come back. We got about 40 minutes left to go, and we will continue plowing through all these phone calls coming in from Mike Levine, Rick Emmett, and Gil Moore of Triumph.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, you guys, I want to tell you about an amazing service. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. And I got to tell you, Audible is unbelievable. It's the premier provider of digital audiobooks. They've got over 180,000 titles to choose from, really in every genre: thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi. And Audible titles, they'll play on the iPhone, Kindle, Android, more than 500 devices for listening anytime, anywhere. Now, I don't know how you guys are, but I can tell you, I have a stack of books that I get in the mail all the time, and as much as I love physically getting books, it's really difficult to find the time to read. I mean, a lot of times when I'm home, I'm busy with my kids, I'm busy catching up on paying bills, you know, the stuff that you do. Now, where I do have time to listen and take in a book would be driving. But guess what? You better not be reading while you're driving, right? But with Audible, you can listen to these books, and it just is such a great way to let the time go by and get lost in a great book and a great story, and it really is awesome. I mean, I really cannot recommend it highly enough. And there's so many great books that you can download, any audiobooks. You can get a free trial from audible.com. Some of the titles they have: The Girl on the Train, Lean In by Shelley Sandberg, The Book Thief by Marcus Zusask, Hope I said his name right. Heard much about that. And it's amazing. And guess what? We're talking free right now, okay? We're talking a free audiobook. Won't cost you a penny to try this out. Amazing service. So here's what I want you to do. Go to audibletrial.com/trunk, T-R-U-N-K, my last name. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trunk. Try it out. Pick any free audiobook. You'll love it. And then see for yourself. audible.com/trunk.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Let's continue right now. This is Lori in Florida. Lori, you're not the woman that knocked on Rick Emmett's door, are you?
No, I was just going to say, I promise you, no, definitely not. Definitely not. As tempting as it was, definitely not.
All right, so, we're just going to check.
Huge fan here, driving home from work, caught your show. I'm like, why don't you repeat the number? For 20 minutes, I'm sitting in my car in my driveway waiting for you to repeat the number.
844-686-5863.
Right. I am so excited. Thank you for taking my call, guys. You are awesome. Awesome. I still listen to you. I'm 50 years old. One of the first bands I got into. Know every word. My husband would be freaking out right now, laughing at me. Okay. Anyway. I missed the first part of the show, I believe. So I'd like to know if you guys can name it, and they might be different for each one of you, three bands that inspired you.
Three bands each that inspired them.
Growing up, yeah.
Or one each from them? So basically, you want to know what their favorite bands are, the influence question, basically.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I can tell you that when Triumph...
Rick, your guitar playing is just unbelievable. Drums, everything. Three-piece, you guys sound like 10 pieces. I mean, amazing.
Thank you so much.
Amazing music.
That wouldn't be if it hadn't been for Jimmy Page and Led Zeppelin. Like, for sure, that was the biggest influence on Triumph as a band. And when we started, we used to play a set where we had Hendrix songs, Deep Purple songs... and of course, Zeppelin was the big one. But I would say, would you guys not agree with me? Triumph influence would be maybe we came out of a Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple, Hendrix, Cream kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Which is pretty much the DNA for most bands that came out around your time.
Yeah.
For the most part, and you guys covered some of that material as well. There was definitely, especially if you look at the history of Triumph and you listen to something like Blinding Light Show and things like that, there was definitely a progressive sort of vibe on some of the earlier records too. Where did that come from? Were you guys into prog stuff at all at any point?
I was more than the other guys. The band I was in before Triumph was a three-piece, very prog kind of approach, and Blinding Light Show was, in fact, a song that had been written in that band.
Oh, really?
That I brought to these guys, and then they said, no, get rid of all those weird time signature things and we'll heavy it up and we'll triumphize it. And so, that's where that came from.
And, you know, speaking of progressive and being here in Toronto, and Alex Lifeson is on your new record, Rick, as well. But you guys never did anything with Rush, or am I mistaken, back in the old days? Did you ever tour with them or did you ever share bills with them at all? Was there any sort of common ground with the band coming out of Toronto, both of you being trios?
Well, you know, the common ground was, I think, you know, Rush opened a lot of doors because they were just before us, you know, and we love them. I mean, great band, great guys, and great Canadians. Can't say enough about Rush. But, no, we never played on a bill with them ever, never played on a festival with them, which is just kind of an odd circumstance, you know. That's just
I think it was Ray, their manager, didn't want us anywhere near the band, near Rush. I think he just kept us apart.
A little bit of a competitive thing, sort of thing, at some point.
Yeah, I think Alex was telling me once that Ray said, those guys in Triumph are coming after you guys, so you better stay sharp, you know.
Right. So put a little heat on them at one point.
Yeah.
We continue with another call from Canada. Joe, welcome. You're on the air. What's going on, bud?
Hey, boys. It's Joe Cumbo here. How you doing?
Joey! this guy next door? Or
can
what?
You go
What's
to
going
the restaurant
on?
And pick me up some fries?
Hey. That's really good.
Joe, what's your history with Triumph?
My history of Triumph, I was a college student, fresh out of Humber College, actually, and I was working as an intern, and the boys decided to keep me on, and I ended up working there for, I think, about 10 years or so, doing various jobs all over. I mean, I did everything. Even with, I think I was Rick's guitar tech on the last few legs of the last tour as well. So
many
odd jobs, but it's really great to hear you guys back in the same room, the three of you together. It's just I was thrilled when I saw the announcement and this was happening.
That's cool, Joe.
It's great you called in, man. It's nice to hear your voice.
Well, I keep in touch with Gil once in a while, but Rick, I saw you way back a few years ago, and Mike, I haven't seen you since. I think you listened to our demo in my truck. We were driving around or something and went for breakfast. I think it's the last time I saw you.
Wow, that was a long time ago, Joe.
that was, but I mean, hey, if you guys do get back out on the road, Gil has my number.
Drop by Metalworks sometime, Joe.
Something tells me you're not going to be getting a call, Joe, anytime soon.
please bring food when you come. Only kidding.
Hey, Eddie, if you ever want to do this again, we need a rider.
A deli tray or something. Joe, thanks, but if you want to go back on the road, you better look for another band because I don't think you're finding it right here. Brian in Ohio. What's going on, Brian? You're on with Triumph.
Guys, thanks for taking this call. Triumph's big years were my high school years, and those are the best albums. And I saw Rick recently in Versailles, Ohio, a small intimate gathering, and it.
Oh, hold on a second, Brian. You went to hold for a second, but I think you're back there. Go ahead, Brian. I think we lost you for a second. Go ahead.
Yeah, guys, just my question is, you talked earlier about Sport of Kings being where outside writers came into the mix, and I always just wondered about the record company's promotion of Sport of Kings and Thunder 7. Like, they didn't promote the albums right, and that they didn't get the commercial results that you might have expected. I just wondered if that contributed to, you know, what happened, you know, in the late Triumph years.
Maybe, you know, that could be part of it. But you got to remember that we were with originally RCA, which was the Record Cemetery of America. and then we went to MCA, Music Cemetery of America. They're both not good rock labels.
How did you end up there? Was it management that decided to sign there? Did they make the best offer? Was it the first approach? How did it work that you found yourself on those labels, which, as you mentioned, neither of them are well known for being rock strongholds?
Well, you know, back in, you know, in the late 70s when we went to RCA, it was probably not a bad place to be originally because they didn't have any rock bands.
Bowie was on RCA at one point, I think,
and they let they had the Scorps too, and they they let them go, you know, they didn't re-sign them, and they had Elvis. I mean, Elvis was RCA.
Yeah, Hall and Oates. Hall and Oates was a lot of pop, but there wasn't a lot of rock.
Evelyn Champagne King.
Yeah.
And then Irving, you know, was the head of he basically signed us to MCA.
Irving Azoff, who now basically runs the entire music industry
in
some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Interesting. You know, something else I wanted to touch on, too, before we go back to our calls, is a few people mentioned this about the sound of Triumph and that the fact that three guys made such a big sound live. There was a point, though, where you did bring out and tour with another guitar player slash supplement. Was it Rick Santers?
Rick Santers, yes.
And
from the Santers Band.
And talk about the decision to do that. At what point did you decide, you know what, we should, you know, Rick, you know, I'm dying here playing lead guitar and singing and on, you know, Mike, you would have the keyboards and the bass going. I mean, everybody was multitasking. How did the decision come? Okay, for live, we really should supplement.
I lobbied for it. And the other guys, like, you know, I was almost going to pipe up and talk about this in some of the earlier questions. Like, when the band was, you know, had already gotten past the golden time of Allied Forces and all that stuff, and then we were in that Sport of Kings period, and the pressure was coming from the record company, I was also feeling like live, and you got to remember the music business was changing. Like, you needed a keyboard player to be able to fill things out, and I wanted somebody else that could sing harmonies so that I could make more demands vocally. And, you know, the other guys were busy. They were doing other stuff on stage. I really felt it was important to get a fourth guy. And they were kind of like, well, I don't know. And that whole thing of, you know, Three Musketeers it does change the dynamic, the politics of that, you know. So, but, you know, I lobbied for it and we did it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think it was bad, but it was different.
It was different.
I still get people that say, yeah, I don't get that yet. There was a fourth guy on stage. I don't get that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a weird thing.
Joined with the reunited members of Triumph, Mike Levine, Rick Emmett, and Gil Moore. And again, I'm stressing this is a reunion for this radio show. This is not a reunion of any pending tour or record or anything like that. So I know that's deflating to some people, but just telling it like it is, because it definitely doesn't seem like that.
We might like to tour with you, Eddie, and we'll just go and do radio shows as long as we can get food somehow into the bargain.
Do a radio tour somewhere. Yeah. Yeah. All right. All right. Again, we take a call from Canada. This is George. Hi, George. You're on Trunk Nation with Triumph.
Hi, is that me?
It's you, George. You're on the air.
I just wanted to say hi to Triumph, and more specifically to Mr. Levine. Recently had a wonderful vacation in Jamaica with my girlfriend, Jen. And I can confirm that we met a gentleman, Chuck, and he introduced us to Mike. And he does kick you off his land, but he's nice to you for about half an hour first.
It gives you 30 minutes, eh?
You're not welcoming people to your doorstep with a beer. Is that the case, Mike?
Well, no. This was last week, I think, wasn't it? Almost.
Yeah, it was the highlight of the trip.
Wait, so do you know this guy?
Yeah, I met him. He was at my house in Jamaica.
Just randomly?
Well, I guess randomly, because I'll tell you what, if Chucky would have phoned first, which he should have, I would have told him to fuck off. But Chucky just drove them up there.
You have how long, George? Thank you for the call. How long have you had a place in Jamaica?
Since 94.
94.
Yeah.
You spend the winters there.
Yeah.
So sounds awesome. I would love to do that. It sounds just like I'm just looking at you. I'm so he's just relaxed and tanned and, like, you know. Mark also in Canada. Hey, Mark, you're on with Triumph. I don't think we've ever had a bigger Canadian invasion on this radio show ever, man. This is awesome. Go ahead, Mark.
Glad to be a part of it. Nice to talk to you guys.
Hey.
Glad glad to see you guys are all in the same room and getting along. That's probably
they're
more
ready to kill each other, though. You got to see. I could the tension. You could cut it with a knife. You know, Gil's going to turn the table over any minute. I can feel it. Go ahead, Mark.
Anyway, I was watching on YouTube. It was actually done on, I think, Much More Music back in the early 2000s. It was the story of Triumph, and Rick, you mentioned that you felt as time was dwindling down in the 80s that you wanted to do some solo things on your own and stretch out, which obviously you ended up doing. But I just wondered, as a group question, I don't know if appropriate, but just if Rick would have gone off to do that, if it could have happened to go off to do a solo and then still keep the band together, do you think that would have changed the history of Triumph?
It's a good question.
Yeah, yes, I do. I think that's what I actually hoped would have happened, but you know, history is otherwise.
So in your mind, Gil, Rick could have had both worlds. He could have gone and done his own sort of thing and also still maintained Triumph.
It's hard to explain. It's hard to go back to that space and time. But, you know, it was a tough time for me because my father just passed away, and that kind of dominated everything in my world. And, you know, Rick had this, you know, idea that he wanted to pursue, and he should have been able to do it, you know, without any restrictions from Triumph. And I think he felt he was being restricted. And I don't know, there was just a lot of personal feelings that were going on at the time. We were getting pressure from the record company. It was a horrible time, you know, but in an ideal world, yeah, if you could live your life twice and you could, you know, sort of script it somewhat, that would have been great. You know, Rick should have, you know, done some solo work, and then, you know, we should have got back together in a couple of years and you know, picked it up and got onto the next chapter of Triumph. As it was, it took too long. But, you know, the good news is we're buddies and here we are.
You know, that, and that's commonplace today. Now you'd be hard-pressed to find a musician in any band that's only in one band.
Yes.
It used to be, if you think back to 70s, even 80s, if you heard of somebody doing something outside, a guy doing something outside of their band, it was a huge red flag. Oh, my God, the sky's falling, it's over. Now, today you got guys in 2, 3, 4 bands, in major bands. And I have different views on that. I think there's pros and cons. I think some of it's too much, honestly, because it takes away some of the special nature of like, wow, I can only see that guy one time a year or waiting for. But I understand it's a byproduct of what's happened to the music industry where record sales aren't there and you've got to multitask a little bit. You guys actually own your catalog, right? You control your masters, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So you release, I mean, that's got to be, I mean, I don't know who had the foresight to be able to pull that off, but that's also incredibly unique. Was that something that management figured out early on, or did you guys just buy them from RCA and MCA? How did that work?
We ended up, when we moved from RCA to MCA, our lawyers were smart enough to get a reversion clause built in, which became known as the Triumph Clause in the music business, because we were the first band to ever get it.
Wow.
And, you know, it's a very good thing that happened and you know, for us.
How does your catalog do? Does it still sell well around the world?
Yeah. It's, you know, it's not... It doesn't sell like the old days, but
right.
it's consistent. And, you know, the streaming business is good and the download business is good. And the physical sales are very good, too.
Yeah, you guys have done some cool not too long. Well, I say not too long ago. You're going to probably tell me it was 10 years. But I remember there was also a Greatest Hits remixed that you did where you went in and I forget who was.
Rich Chickie.
Went in and remixed and did some of that. Were you guys happy with that? Did you like hearing those songs kind of in a new version with a new coat of paint on them as far as mixes?
When we first did it, you know, I liked all the new mixes. It's funny, I've gone back. I like the old mixes now. You know, there was more. I don't know, the dynamics, probably the right word. I don't know, Mike. Mike was involved in every mix we ever did and was really the expert on it. But
yeah.
I don't know if you like the new mixes or the old mixes, but.
You know, it's like a song is a song. You know, I didn't like the idea of remixing the songs initially. And actually, Rich, I thought he did a really good job. But there's no, I think, where even the mixes that we did on the original records, of course, there's stuff that I don't like about them. But in general, there's just something about some of the songs that, just you could never recreate that feeling or that soul in the mix. It was like whether somebody was sitting at the board pushing the snare drum up and down or whatever it
was.
Or
the light
exactly.
was going off the, what was
yeah.
it called?
Oh, the audio illusion processor
yeah,
was working.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That should be the name of the, if there ever is another Triumph record, it should be called Audio Illusion Processor. That would be awesome. Let's go to Kentucky and say hello to Blake. Hi, Blake. You're on the air.
Hey, great. Hey, just wanted to say real quickly, thank you specifically to Rick. You guys were such a big influence on me, but about 15 years ago, I had an opportunity to open a show for you in Louisville, and you were just so unbelievably gracious, signed all my Triumph records. Just wanted to say thanks.
You're welcome.
My question is, years and years ago, you were talking about pyro in the early days. And you actually mentioned Louisville when you were talking about some of the places in the states that you went.
There might have been a fire. There might have been a fire.
That's what I was calling about.
Yeah.
That's what I was calling about. That was the very first time I ever saw you at Memorial Auditorium in Louisville, and there was a stupid fire, and they stopped the show.
Wait, what caused the fire? Did the band cause the fire?
No,
somebody in the stands caused the fire?
Yeah, it was a soft seat. A theater, maybe 3,000, 4,000
seats. Something like
that. But somebody
you know, dropped a doobie down into a
my
seat.
Yeah,
to the
my
velvet cushion or something.
Blake, was it you that started the fire?
Negative.
All right, because there's probably a statute of limitations. You'd probably be okay now. But.
Our tour manager got arrested. They arrested him.
Why?
Because he refused to stop the show.
Obstruction of justice kind of thing.
Wanton endangerment.
There you go.
Which is a felony.
And Gil was like, cool, fire on the stage and fire off the stage.
Well, you know, Eddie, it's easy to blame Triumph for fires. I mean, you know, I know we're a soft target, you know. But, you know, I like us as a band. You know, we like our fans and we like our fires.
Cliff in North Carolina. Go ahead, Cliff.
What's up, brother? Hey, man. 30 years ago, I saw you guys at the Felt Farm with Yngwie Malmsteen opening up, man. When I was 16 years old, man, you guys
fucking blew my mind.
Great.
But I'm going to switch gears, man. I called up about, like, archive stuff. But I remember 9 years ago when you guys first reunited, and you said one of the reasons why you wouldn't do a tour was because the promoters just weren't there. I'm here to tell you, I play in a Genesis tribute, and we play a lot of venues like the House of Blues and Fillmore-sized venues. And I got to tell you, man, if you guys wanted to do a similar show to the one that you did back in the day, I think you could do it in those places, man. They got the biggest stages and, you know, rigging and all that, man. I mean, if you guys were to go back at it, you know, you could play venues like that. And I have no doubt in my mind your diehards will come out and you guys could probably put 2,000.
I love how the fans. Cliff, I love you. And I thank you for the call, Cliff. And I get where you're coming from. But I love how the fans are ready to do the rigging at this point, basically, to get a Triumph show. You know, I'd hang the sign if you want. If there's a light bulb out, I'd fix the bulb, you know?
We should hire him as tour manager right now. Hell, those are the best ideas I ever heard.
Problem is, you can't play the drums for Gil, and he doesn't feel like putting 6 months in while his studio goes to shit. You know, that's the problem. JD in Texas. Go ahead, JD.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Quick comment. First, I'm 49 years old. I saw Triumph first time at the Municipal Auditorium in Austin, Texas in 1979, just a game tour.
Wow.
Interestingly enough, I was a huge Kiss fan at the time, and you guys had one of those late night commercials, and it came on. It had the pyro, and Rick was, you know, the guitar, and it was just. I looked at it, and I at that time I didn't know who Triumph was, and I saw that commercial, and I'm like, I gotta go. And so I think I got a ticket for it was maybe $7 or $9 at the time. And then you got there
and you're like, damn, they don't wear makeup, though.
Yeah. But
you don't want your money back, do you?
Well, that night literally changed my life. I mean, the next day I went out and bought Just a Game. And I will say that, you know, I'm a huge music guy. And if there are two bands that define, you know, everything music meant to me through all the years, it would be Triumph and UFO. And
yes, another band I love.
Yeah, I would say to you, Rick, that, you know, you were my Jimmy Page. I just was just in awe and everything you were able to do on the guitar and just multi-styles. And you know, I've also been playing guitar my whole life and you know, just been a huge influence. So wanted to get that out of the way. But
I appreciate that. Thank you.
The question I had is, where would you guys consider that you were at your artistic peak as a band? And then and I missed the first hour, but. And then where were you at your commercial peak where, you know, the money was rolling in at its best?
Interesting. It sounded like, and thank you, JD, for the call. It sounded like from what you guys were saying earlier, the artistic peak would have been, did you all kind of felt Allied Forces time. Would that be accurate?
Yeah.
Allied Forces never surrender.
Okay.
There was some stuff on Thunder 7 where we were in transition, but I was left to my own devices a lot in the studio. So for me personally, there were some moments like I did the time cannon vocal thing on Thunder 7, and I did a little blues guitar instrumental thing, and Midsummer Daydream was on. I think that's probably the best guitar piece I wrote in the Triumph era, but that was all Thunder 7. But... So artistically, maybe for me, I'd bleed over into Thunder 7. But for sure, Allied Forces was probably artistic. I'm going to leave the business question about money.
When was the cash coming in the biggest, Mike?
The cash? What cash?
the money. What was the most lucrative time?
I mean, ticket price was $18 or $20. You know, a T-shirt in a building was $20, I think, maybe, tops.
Yeah.
You know, so there was never any – and a record sold for $7.98.
Right. You know, so what you're saying is it was always a consistent thing. It was never like you guys were making it rain at any point. You know?
We had to tour to make money. Yeah. Like our record sales, we didn't make huge amounts off that. Like the most successful song I had as a writer was Somebody's Out There off of Sport of Kings. And it cracked the top 30 on Billboard or something as a single. And that's, you know, that was airplay. It wasn't there because of sales, you know. And so, you know, that's a commercial measuring stick, a Billboard single. but there was no money in that.
Let's go to Canada again. Here in Canada, it's Tony. Go ahead, Tony. You're on the air with Triumph.
Eddie, it's an honor and a privilege to talk to you. And Gil, Rick, Mike, you guys changed my life. You guys
better.
I was just going to say, you wrecked my life, you son of a bitches.
No.
My girlfriend flew to Toronto. Never mind.
My girlfriend went to Rick's house to have a beer with him, and he slammed the door in her face.
You ruined my life.
Go ahead, Tony.
You guys were one of the first shows I ever saw, the Thunder 7 tour at Maple Leaf Gardens, and you guys blew me away. It changed my life. Gil, I'm a drummer, and your style.
My condolences.
You want to play in the Triumph reunion?
Sure. I live right around the corner from Metalworks. I'll be there for
everybody. Wait, hold on. I just had an idea.
Big subdivision there.
I just had an idea. Maybe that's the move. Maybe Gil just sings, and you get a stunt drummer to drum.
Yeah.
And this way, he doesn't put the work in behind the kid. You get a young kid to play drums, and Gil could tutor him, and Gil could just sing.
Right, but it'd be good. And then when Rick sings, Gil could dance.
Except with a tambourine.
Go boots.
Go ahead, Tony. I'm sorry. Finish up.
That's all right. I just wanted to thank you guys for what you've meant to me over the years. My daughter recently got married, and my wife and I, we walked into the hall, to the reception hall, to follow your heart. So that's just to beautiful.
Nice to hear, Tony. Thank you.
Beautiful. Yeah. All right, Tony. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the kind words. Appreciate it. Well, that was a lot of fun and a lot of callers, as you would imagine. I could have taken calls for a couple hours easily there with the guys reunited from Triumph. And to no surprise, a lot of Canadians invading the SiriusXM phone lines during that interview to call in and talk to the guys as well. Really a lot of fun, and it was a blast doing that. And again, I appreciate those guys coming in and just doing it to do it. You know, nothing to sell, nothing to promote. Just doing it for the fans, doing it for me, and it is greatly appreciated. And I hope you guys enjoyed that interview as much as I enjoyed doing it. And had a great time visiting Toronto for the first time as well. Very cool city. Had a great time there. Hope to be back there soon. All right, you guys know the deal. Connect with me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Eddie Trunk. EddieTrunk.com is the website. Music news updated daily. The blog is the Trunk Report, all appearances on the homepage. And you can also get merch from me. I got a merch store there, signed copies of either of my books. Just hit those tabs, all on EddieTrunk.com. And you can email me, Eddie@EddieTrunk.com. This podcast is produced by Katie Irizarry. I will see you guys next week for another all-new episode. We post new every Thursday, podcast1.com and iTunes, wherever you are in the world listening and downloading. Thanks for doing so. Have a great week, everybody.
I'm Clay Smith, host of Fully Booked by Kirkus Reviews, the podcast for book lovers interested in interviews with best-selling authors, insider scoop on the hottest releases, reading ideas for book clubs and bibliophiles, and even tips about which books to skip altogether. So be sure to download new episodes of Fully Booked by Kirkus Reviews every Tuesday. You can get it on the Podcast One app, or you can subscribe on iTunes, and don't forget to rate, review, and share.